So we are in our second day of our three-day fall retreat here in October, Tampa Franciscan Center. Looking deeply into these marvelous teachings of Zen Master Bunke. But before we return to Bunke, please all enjoy dwelling in your unborn mind, which simply means you just listen. Don't make this into too big a deal. If you're not following thought, and you're just aware, and where does awareness function? It functions through seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, even aware of mental phenomena such as thoughts, feelings, perceptions. This is all the function of your unborn mind. You don't do any of it. Right? Anybody here make themselves hear? Anybody remember turning on their hearing? You always had it. Right? You always had your capacity to see, to taste, to smell, right? Walk up and down stairs. Even to be aware of thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. You didn't do a thing. It was only the arrogance of the self, which doesn't exist, by the way. Which is really kind of, even makes the storyline even more pathetic. Takes all not responsibility, but takes all what's the word? It's their doing, right? It's the self's doing. You hear, think, feel, you all because of me, right? It's a lie, as Master Bunke pointed out. So anyhow, that's beside the point. Enjoy dwelling in your unborn mind for a minute, and I just want to talk to you about our refuge and precepts trainings. Traditionally, on the final morning of retreat, tomorrow morning will be the final morning, instead of our chanting service such as we had this morning, we have either a recitation or a transmission of the three refuges and the five mindfulness trainings. This is a tradition that goes back to the Buddha himself, when people encountered him and encountered his teaching, they very much wanted some formal way to acknowledge that they were taking refuge in him and his teachings, wanted to be his students, wanted to be his followers, and so they asked him, for some sort of ritualistic means of expressing that and taking that. And he gave them the formula of the three refuges and the five mindfulness trainings. Now, in a certain way, everyone here, whether you have taken the refuge and the trainings or not, you're all on the way. In a certain sense, just being here, you are taking, you have taken refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Practicing, you're practicing with a community, you're practicing under the guidance of a Buddhist teacher in the tradition of the Buddha and following his Dharma, right? So why would somebody take a formal ceremony? Again, it's just, I think, a very human experience. Traditionally, during meaningful transitions, we acknowledge them ceremonially. When we graduate, graduations, when we get married, we take vows, other types of swearing-ins, people take vows and oaths, and there's something about making a public declaration that seems to make things more meaningful to individuals, to let the whole community know their commitment. So very simply, what are called the three refuges or the three jewels, or just basically, again, there's a lot to be said about them. I think probably you, most of you, have some understanding of it. It means that going forward, where I go for refuge, which means refuge from what? Refuge from refuge from my own habituated tendencies to follow paths of suffering, or paths that cause suffering, whether in my actions of body, speech, or mind, or just in my encounters with the world and dealing with the world and the turmoils and the ups and downs, chaos, confusion. We need a refuge, some place where we can go for rest, somewhere we can go for safety, and somewhere that has the capacity of really nourishing us. So these three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, Sangha, are traditionally the refuge, which means that we look to the Buddha and his own experience of enlightenment. We look to the lineage of teachers who have preserved in a living way the Buddha's teaching and our expressions of our Buddha nature, the realization of our Buddha nature, the manifestation of our Buddha nature. We go to refuge to the Buddha, and we go to the refuge to the Dharma, which are the teachings and the practices which help us realize experientially, personally, the teachings that the Buddha taught and the masters teach. And finally, I go to refuge to the community, my community of fellow practitioners, people who are walking the way with me. And again, you know, in this world, without knowing it, everyone takes refuge, right? Most people take refuge in their ego and their self. Many people take refuge in their things, right? Their homes and their beautiful objects or unbeautiful objects in their home and their cars, and they take refuge in their work, and they take refuge in their profession, and they take refuge in their favorite substance, and they take refuge in their favorite athletic team. And I mean, you know, there are all kinds of places, I could go on and on, that people in this world take refuge, right? But there are all kinds of reasons why one is seeking a true refuge. One should really investigate deeply to make sure, am I taking refuge? Am I putting my trust? Am I putting my confidence in something that really has the power to deliver to me that which I'm really seeking? In terms of my own self-healing, in terms of my own transformation, in terms of my own awakening to the full potential. So in a certain sense, historically, I would say taking refuge is quite meaningful if you mean it and you have really investigated and thought about and contemplated that which you're taking refuge in and looked around and checked out all the different things you can take refuge in and decided, this refuge, Buddha Dharma Sangha, is a true refuge, is a pure refuge, is something that has offered refuge for beings of all types, all ages, all shapes, all cultures throughout historical times, and has always delivered the goods. It's important. Right. So taking refuge is very meaningful, and it hopefully represents an inner shift in one's life. To take refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha doesn't mean you have to leave your own religion, leave your family, believe other things. It really says, because, you know, there may be all kinds of minor refuges or more personal refuges that we have in our ordinary lives. But it means at the core of my aspiration, I am clear that this path and that this teaching and that these teachers and this community really have the capacity to support me in my personal journey in this life. Now, part of the ceremony is to formally receive the three refuges, take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And then the second part is to receive what are called traditionally in Buddhism, the five precepts. Thich Nhat Hanh, a number of years ago, renamed them as the five mindfulness trainings to kind of give them a different emphasis, as opposed to just precepts, don't do this and do that. They're really something that involve training, which means it's a process of training in these guidelines, but also the idea that one needs mindfulness to really practice it. And quite simply, what precepts have to do with is two things, really. It has to do with cause and effect, or what's called karma. All right. It means even though usually, like let's say, one embraces this path because one really wants to heal and transform, or one is very interested in the mind aspects of the mental cultivation aspects of the Buddhist path, of mindfulness, of concentration, of insight, wisdom, looking deeply. If we are not attentive to the actions of our body, speech, and mind, which means our capacity in the actions of our body, speech, and mind to continue to create suffering, confusion, pain for ourselves and others, if we're not clear about how to stop that, as well as to begin to act in a way that creates good, does no harm, but actually creates good in life, in the actions of our body, speech, and mind, our life will always have an upset, conflictual, chaotic context to it, which makes it very difficult to make any kind of real headway on the path as long as the mind is still creating pain and suffering for itself and others. So in a certain way, if one really wants to heal and transform, you know, one has to kind of begin at a place of solidity. You know, it's like you got to stop doing what you've always been doing if you want it to be better. And so these five precepts or mindfulness trainings are means of helping us look at the actions of our body, speech, and mind. Clearly delineate those types of actions that cause suffering to ourselves and others, and to learn how to stop them and to do their opposite. All right, so they're fairly simple, but that's the purpose of them, to stop causing harm and suffering to beings and to ourselves. We will leave several copies. Okay. I think a number of us have our copies of the Plugged Chanting book over here. So you just look up five mindfulness trainings, either transmission or recitation. Let me just say, in our community, well, probably I would say many people, most people, have taken this ceremony. In no way do we keep a record of who has or who isn't or hasn't. It is not a prerequisite for being part of the community, being my student. It's nothing like that. It really has to do with your own inner calling. So basically, if there is nobody who hasn't taken the trainings tomorrow morning, we'll do a recitation of the five mindfulness trainings. But if there are people here who would like to receive the transmission, please look over during your free time today. If you're not familiar with the five mindfulness trainings, look them over. And then at 6:30 tonight, upstairs in the room where I do the interviews, Bill and Angie will meet with you and answer any questions. And that's for people who want to take them, and those for people who may be thinking about taking them and have some questions. So that'll be at 6:30, between 6:30 and 7:15 tonight. There'll be that meeting upstairs. Now, this is important. If you do want to receive transmission of the three refuges and the five mindfulness trainings tomorrow morning, please, sometime during the day, but at the latest by this evening sitting, please leave a little piece of paper in the bell that has your name, has your email address, and has a statement of your spiritual aspiration. All right. One of the things, what happens when the transmission occurs is you are given afterwards a what's called a Dharma name. So in the same way, when we came into our biological families, they gave us a name. In the same way, when we come into the Buddhist family, our teacher gives us our Dharma name. And I will be transmitting the trainings and the refuges in the tradition of Thich Nhat Hanh, and I'll be choosing a name for you. So again, if you do want to receive a transmission tomorrow morning, again, please attend the meeting at 6:30 tonight, and also some point during the day, leave a note with your name, your email address, and a brief 3, 4, 5 sentence statement of your spiritual aspiration, why you practice, right? Why you're taking refuge, what do you hope to accomplish in your life. Any questions, just quickly, about the three refuges and the five mindfulness trainings? Good. So, I hope everyone has been reflecting deeply on the teachings that we had yesterday from Zen Master Bunkei, and we will continue this morning looking deeply into his wisdom and his teaching style. So this is a different talk that he gave. And again, I'm skipping around, and you'll notice there's some repetition. Like many teachers, he's hit on something that he finds is meaningful, and he just keeps hammering it home. Why does he keep hammering it home? Because people just don't get it. So, you know, he tries again. Come back the next day, you know, he's very resilient in that way. Doesn't mind saying it over and over again. So we don't know if he's talking to the same group that he was talking to last time. Before it was on the 23rd day of the one we did yesterday was on the 23rd day of the 8th month, the midday sermon. And this is the 25th day of the 8th month, the morning sermon. So we're actually going backwards. This was 3 days before that earlier one in the morning. So he obviously gave several talks during the day. Okay. So he begins. He says, "Now probably you're all wondering what the unborn Buddha mind is like." And once again he says, "Well, while you're sitting there facing me and trying to catch what I'm saying, if the bark of a dog or the cry of a street vendor should find its way in here from outside the temple walls, though you're listening to me, each of you would hear it, even though you had no intention to do so, thanks to the working of the Buddha mind, which hears and understands in the unborn." Okay. So, I mean, does everybody get this? Right. He's talking about your awareness. Your unborn awareness, that even that has the function of immediately going to and recognizing things all by itself. It doesn't depend on you. It doesn't depend on thought. It has its own innate wisdom and capacity, and it is ever present. Right? It doesn't stop. It doesn't start. It doesn't begin, it doesn't end, it always is. It's that simple. Right? Everyone here, right now, right, is hearing in the unborn mind. is seeing in the unborn mind. Does everybody see me? Can you see me? Right? Does this seeing have a beginning? Does this seeing seem to have any, any restrictions? Look, anywhere you just turn your head. It sees, it recognizes. It sees Gil over there. It sees the trees moving. I use words, but the words comes after the seeing. Right? I only use words because already my unborn mood of mind has seen it and knows what it is. Right? And then, because of conditioning, the words come. Right? But before the words come, there is just the seeing and the knowing. Right? It's wonderful. I go over here. Right? We know everybody immediately. Right? Don't have to do anything. Now, even, did you notice how I kind of turned my head and said that everything I just said? I didn't plan any of it. Look, it's still doing it. What is doing it? Why did I say what is doing it? Why am I now, you can keep going on and on, but finally you have to just go and say what? It is marvelous. It is wondrous. What a capacity this mind has. So though you're listening to me, each of you would hear it, even though you had no intention to do so, thanks to the working of the Buddha mind, which here it understands in the unborn. Then it goes on, so I want to read this. The Buddha mind, unborn and illuminating all things with perfect clarity. Do you understand that? There is not a person here who said, I am working so hard in my practice because why? Because I want to one day illuminate everything with perfect clarity, right? Peter goes, wow, yeah, that's why I'm working. I've been working for 30 years to illuminate everything with perfect clarity, right? And Bhante says, you're doing it all the time. Your onboard Buddha mind is doing that all the time. You don't have to work at it. It's already happening. You're just so busy working at it, you don't even know that it's happening. Right. So he said, the Buddha mind, unborn and illuminating all things with perfect clarity, okay, so this is, again, pay close attention, is like a mirror. So once again, if we didn't get it with the crow's cawing, or if we didn't get it with the dog's barking, or if we didn't get it with the street vendor, Bhante, he's just, all right, now he's going to pull out his mirror trick. let me see if I can get him to understand this by pulling out my mirror trick. All right. So he says, the Buddha mind, unborn and illuminating all things with perfect clarity, is like a mirror, standing clear and spotlessly polished. Okay? So he's helping us to understand. So this mind, this unborn Buddha mind, is like a mirror. Clear, clean. And he says, a mirror, as you know, reflects anything that's before it. Right? Whatever is placed in front of it, it never fails to reflect, though the mirror has no idea of intention of doing so. Right? He's talking about your mind, your unborn mind, your unborn awareness. It's like a mirror. Right? It has the capacity of reflecting perfectly, with great clarity, whatever ariseth before it. But it itself has no, what does he say? Has no idea of intention. The mirror, is the mirror trying to reflect you? Right? You know, so when you, you know, when you stand in front of the morning, is the mirror going, this can be a hard one, but I'm really... And this person's really, I really don't want to, you know, but it's my job, and, you know, they're up there reflective, right? We laugh because why? Because we know the mirror what? Doesn't think like that, does it? Right? And it doesn't have to work at reflecting. It just what? It just reflects whatever appears before it. In the same way, our minds are like that. Whatever arises in it, it just reflects, right? My awareness, which is now looking around the room, it sees what's ever here, right? It's not working at it, nor is it choosing what it sees. It just reflects whatever passes before it, right? And it does it perfectly, without any intention or ideas. When the object is taken away, the mirror doesn't reflect it any longer, though it makes no decision to cease reflecting. Right? So when the object moves away from the mirror no longer reflects it, but it doesn't not reflect it because it's made a decision not to reflect it. Right? It only doesn't reflect it because why? It's no longer appearing within it. It immediately ceases. So, Bunke says, that's just how the unborn Buddha mind works. Okay? You see and hear all things, no matter what they are, although you haven't generated a single thought to see or hear them. Because of the vital working of the unborn Buddha mind, each of you received at birth. This is your birthright. You don't have to do anything. Think how hard life would be as every time you wanted to see, you had to work at it. Right? Every time you wanted to hear, you had to work at it. You don't, do you? Every time you got to the bottom of the stairs and you had to walk upstairs, you had to stop and think about it. How does that left leg work again? And which muscle is connected to which muscle? And you know what I mean? It'd take you half a day to get upstairs, wouldn't it? But luckily what? There's some knowing. You know, and we would give it all kinds of names, but it's beyond all that. It's some knowing that just does it. Right? What is that? We never stop to see the wondrousness of this unborn mind that we have. You know why? He told us yesterday. Why not? Because we're just too caught up in our self drama, right, to notice the wonder that's going on right in front of us, right? We have too many important things to be mad about and be hurt about and be resentful about and be worried about and be angry about. You're right, don't we? We have important things to do, right? We have so many issues that we've got to be working on. Who's got time, right, to notice the wonder of life that's right in front of us? Right? I mean, it's right. We human beings have important tasks that we need to resolve, right? to notice the trees, the wind, to notice each other, to notice the wondrous function of our unborn Buddha mind. So, Bunke says, I go on explaining things to you like this to make you understand. If you can't grasp it today, then I don't suppose you could understand it no matter how many times you listen to me. I'm just reading his words. I'm not commenting. But those who do understand about their unborn Buddha mind after only this one meeting, these people are living Buddhas now and for endless future ages. So you see, you better listen carefully to what I say. There's no telling when I'll be back here again to talk to you. And even if you went and listened to other people, I don't think you would find anyone else who would tell you about the unborn Buddha mind. Be sure then that you don't go brewing up a lot of unnecessary thoughts in your heads. So this should give you comfort. Even on some little island in Japan in the 1600s, people were brewing up all kinds of unnecessary thoughts in their heads. He says, make up your minds that you're never again going to revolve in the wheel of existence. And he goes on and on. Let's look at something else. 45. He says, you must understand about the marvelous illumination of the unborn mind. Once you have been to a certain place, you don't forget it. Even after years have passed, it's easy for you to remember it. Now you see, we go, oh, well, that, you know, somebody here is go, well, that's just memory, right? How many people go, well, that's just, we call that memory, right? But what is, you know, what is that? Isn't it amazing? We don't go, isn't that amazing? That this mind of ours has this capability of remembering, imaging things that happened years ago, right? Just like that. We don't go, you know, what an incredible thing this mind is. And I didn't, you know, I didn't develop that, did I? It's part of what? Part of the capacity of this mind, right? I mean, how marvelous. Just like that, something will come to me from the past. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 40 years ago, just like that, right? The feeling, the image, you know, just like that. You know, we say, oh, it's, I mean, we say things like, well, it came from my memory. What does that mean? Huh? Like we have a place inside our head called memory, like a little box or something. And we don't even, you know, it's wondrous, isn't it? Memory. What we call memory. So he says, once you've been to a certain place, you don't forget it. Even after years have passed, it's easy for you to remember it. You don't always have to be keeping it consciously in your mind. If someone else goes to that same place, the two of you can talk about it, though you may be miles distant from it. No matter where you are when you talk about it, it makes no difference. Your accounts will still be in agreement. We never kind of think what a marvelous thing that is, do we? Can we take credit for our memory? No. Our unborn mind has that capacity. Now he tries another one. He says, while you're walking down a road, if you happen to encounter a crowd of people approaching from the opposite direction, none of you gives a thought to avoiding the others, yet you don't run into one another. Hmm? Simple, simple, simple. So you're walking down a busy street, lots of people. You know, you don't have to kind of think your way through it. You somehow are able to what? To move this way and to move that way. Well, what's doing that? What knows? You know, what knows kind of in advance what's going to happen, what knows which way to move, which way, right? We don't have to think our way around it, do we? It just happens. Well, our mind has some capacity for knowing just what to do. He says, none of you gives a thought to avoiding the others, yet you don't run into one another. You aren't pushed down or walked over. You thread your way through them by weaving this way and that, dodging and passing on, making no conscious decisions in this, and yet you're able to continue along unhampered nonetheless. Now, in the same way, the marvelous illumination of the unborn Buddha mind deals perfectly with every possible situation. I will read that again, because that is, as Bill would say, so revolutionary. Because there is not a person in here who doesn't think, right, that they're in charge and that they got to figure everything out in advance so they can deal with situations in this life. Right? Listen to what he's saying. In the same way, the marvelous illumination of the unborn Buddha mind deals perfectly with every possible situation. I mean, that's quite a statement. The marvelous illumination of the unborn Buddha mind deals perfectly with every possible situation. Anybody disagree with it?
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So on the one hand, it's compared to a mirror, which is just reflecting whatever is in front of it. And on the other hand, it's described as this infinite wisdom that just knows if you are allowed to act, just surrender to it.
Right.
So I'm not sure how they can be the same thing.
Okay, so look at the Buddha. You know who I'm talking about? Oh, so the question is, in his two examples, on one hand he says it's just a mirror that just purely reflects, and then in his next example he says it seems to have this incredible illuminative wisdom. Right? How can it be both? And because it is both. I mean, he is connoting the miraculous nature of our Buddha mind. Now, you know, this was. I mean, this goes back to the Buddha. Right? Please understand. He's just talking in a very simple, direct way. Exactly what the Buddha. You've heard me say it before. The Buddha taught from the deepest wisdom, right, to the most simplistic dealings with just the dealings of people would have just everyday questions about their lives, right? He dealt with the whole, if you read the sutras and the agamas and the nikayas and all these various, teachings of the Buddha, which are all just encounters he had with all kinds of people, we see he had this incredible wisdom, right? He didn't get it from reading. He didn't read anything, right? And yet, when anybody would ask him a question, he would immediately respond. What was responding? Well, he was a Buddha. He responded from his Buddha mind. And that was his, that was his enlightenment. His enlightenment was, I always thought that this little thinking mind and the self that was attached to it was me. Right? And that's how I identified. And then one day, I woke up. And all of a sudden, I realized I had this Buddha mind. Right? That is the true mind of all beings, and that it has innately this capacity for brilliant clarity and wisdom. It knows. It knows. I mean, that's what Bankei is saying. But we, that is, that seems so far away from us, right? Because we think it comes from what? Either thinking about something, right? Or reading, learning about it. That's how you become wise. But if you've ever met wise people in your life, even though they might have read a lot, their wisdom is not coming from what they've read. Their wisdom is coming because they have tapped into, right? As Alex was so excited, you know, he's a disciple of Socrates. I can't believe. Well, of course, it's of course. He's, you know, they've just tapped into the same. It's the same wisdom. That's what they're living from. And it just naturally has the capacity of responding to situation. It is a wisdom mind. And one of the reasons it has the capacity for wisdom is because it sees clearly what's in front of it, like a mirror. You know, there's some point in here where, I don't know if I have it, where he talks about, somebody says, oh, you know, you're kind of amazing. You know, all these different types of people come before you, samurais and officials and poor people and men and women and, you know, all these kind of people, and all they come with all these different kind of problems, and you're able to respond, you know, so wisely to all of them. You know, you must have somehow, I think this question is, you know, you must have ESP or something. How do you always know, you know what I mean, what to say to people? You must have these extra sense. And he says, no, I have the unborn Buddha mind. He says, he makes a very interesting statement where he says, you look at somebody's face, you can see everything about them that's inside them. Right? That's all. He says it's all written there. You just have to see it. But most of the time we do not see, because all our looking is skewed, because we're looking through the self. We're looking through our thoughts, our interpretations, our projections, so we don't see clearly. So how could we see another person? We just see, a reflection of ourself. The unborn Buddha mind deals perfectly with every possible... I mean, that's quite a statement. I'll say that. He says, deals perfectly with every possible situation. How does it do it? Funny, just was flashed into my mind. Anybody ever been in a near accident? I just flashed into my mind. My son and I were in Mexico. We were driving, rented a car, and it was at night. And you know, most of the roads there, they're two lane, and there's no shoulder or anything. I mean, it's like, you know, there's just, and we're driving along at night, and we really try not to be on the road at night for obvious reasons, and a lot of traffic. We're out somewhere in the country, and all of a sudden, coming right down the road right at us is a car, you know, like 60, 80 miles an hour, right for us. And just like that, my son was driving. He turned, you know, and there was actually an opening in the forest there. And the guy went right by us. But, you know, he didn't think it, did he? How did he know what to do? Right? And we all have situations like that. I mean, I don't know why that one popped into my mind. But we all have situations like that. You know, little ones throughout the day, there's something seems to be functioning that has an intelligence and a wisdom and a self-preservative function that's quite wonderful. And yet we don't acknowledge it, and we don't trust it. You know, when so many people say, I can't let go, that's what they mean. Or I have control issues. It means what? That we think there's an I that's in control. Or we think that, you know, I can figure out my life by thinking about it. You know, all we ever figure out with our thoughts are just, you know, responding to problems that the thoughts created. So now we're using more thoughts to work our ways out of the problems the thoughts created in the first place, you know what I mean? And we feel great because we have a solution. But we forget that it was the thought that created the problem. You know, it's we're endlessly just looping. You know, and what Bankei is saying, there is another way. Right? And again, remember from yesterday. You know, he said, you know, this, you know, you lived out of this mind for many early years of your life. Right? And you functioned. Right? You were happy, you were sad, you were this, you were that, but life was kind of easy and pure. And things just came and gone and went, and it was right. But now we're much heavier. What's made us heavy? When we think back about being 2 years old, or 3 years old, or 4 years old, 5 years old, we say, it's a long time ago, I don't feel like that anymore, right? It's because coverings. But in truth, that childlike mind is still here, still functioning. It hasn't changed. Because why hasn't it changed? Because it's beyond birth and death. It just is. It's just this. The more you think and ponder on this, the further from the truth you get. Sound familiar? Yeah, I can see you all there pondering this. How can I think my way into it? Doesn't he say to try to know great mind with small mind, this exercise in futility? Yes, Alex.
I'm glad Jessica asked that question, because it is, when you first contemplate it, it's very difficult to in our culture to sort of hear something and say, no, it's it really can't be both. It really has to be either or, because that's the way we are trained to see this dualistic dichotomy. And I know at the turn of the century, physicists were you know, incredibly sort of in two camps. Light is either a wave, or light is either a particle. And they would have conferences where they'd go at it and they'd have knockdown dragouts. But then Einstein came along and he said, no, light is both. If you ask light a wave question, it'll give you a wave answer. If you give light a particle question, it'll give you a particle answer. So how could it be? But yet the wonder of the universe is that it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the question that you ask it, and the trust that you have that in this cosmos and in this nature of world that we have, there is an answer, but you have to trust that it's there.
Right, and that is why, again, in these very simple ways, Bankei is showing us... You know. Look at it. You know. Look at the marvelous function. He says. You know, and all these little simple things. You know, and this is nothing to do with your thinking or your intention or yeah. I mean, yeah. It's a mirror that has wisdom, but it's not the wisdom of you're pretty, you're ugly. You know, you ought to do something with your hair. You know, it's not that wisdom. It's a wisdom that just knows, you know. Right? And that's quite wonderful. We think we need so much more, right? We think we need so much more elaboration, so much interpretation to live life. But think about what makes you happy. What makes you happy? I mean, anybody here ever been happy? I don't know, maybe this kind of thing only attracts people who like to suffer. I don't know. Anybody here ever been happy? What makes you happy?
Neutral.
What? Well, no, but I'm not just absence of, but what makes you happy?
Connection.
All right, connection means what? Okay, well, but yeah, just all right, just being present and open with somebody you care about. right? I mean, is any thought involved in that? No. I mean, I just had an ecstatic experience just a few minutes ago eating an orange. I mean, it was wonderful. It was delicious. Right? I mean, ecstasy may be a little strong, but I mean, but it was happiness. It was happy, right? It was pleasurable. I mean, that's right. Anybody else? Anybody else have a happy experience today? How about today? What?
Nature
means what? But what we use words.
Trees and sky.
You mean you looked, and you heard, and you felt. I mean, that's all. I mean, that's right. I mean, when we talk about that's really what happened. You look, hearing, seeing, smelling, feeling. The unborn Buddha mind, just reflecting things, right? Yeah. Yes. Painting.
Yes, I had to learn some things.
Yeah. Just moving and painting and colors and yeah. Just a doing. Anybody else have a happy experience ever in their life? you're a tough crowd to get.
This.
That?
This.
It's making you happy, right? Just being here,
yeah.
Just hearing and feeling, yeah. Just. No, just being present. Yeah, just here you are. Yeah, here I am. Seeing, hearing, smelling, feeling. Yeah.
Teaching children.
But again, you know, I would say to you, and again, what that probably means is when you're actually doing it. You know what I mean? When you think about it, we talk in this kind of abstract way, but when you really get into it, you probably mean it's that actual interaction. You, a child, the responsiveness, it's just kind of happening, right? It's it just is. It's all unfolding in the unborn mind.
And the Buddha mind insight on how to teach a particular thing to a particular child.
Right. And a lot of that, again, you know, there's probably some learning involved and experience. But a lot of that, again, is in the moment. It's just happening. I think that's it. You know, and Bankei's not saying, you know, if you're going to be a teacher, don't go to school. If you're going to have a profession, don't learn it. But he's saying the actuality is in the moment. It just happens. You know, you know, if you're present to that child, totally present to that child, and you really see them, you know, you kind of know. You kind of know who they are, and you know what they need, and it just comes out. You know, you respond appropriately. You don't have to think it. And we know, if anybody's ever been in a profession where you've trained in the early days, you know, you're always looking at your notes, you know, because you don't have the skill. But once you get it, it just happens, right? And then it's just a natural unfolding of responsiveness. And that's what gives you happiness, right? You know, if you're a first-year teacher and you're always trying to remember, and you know, you're not happy because it's all up here. You know, it's all a struggle. But once you enter into the flow of it, it becomes, your profession becomes a source of happiness to you because it's now flowing in the unborn mind. It's just happening. Any other happinesses? Yes.
I love to cook for people.
You what?
I love to cook for people.
Cook. Yeah, cooking. Yeah. Cooking, you, the whole process of cooking, being with the people, right? I mean, it's, can you see as we give our list, all of this stuff is unborn Buddha mind stuff. It's just being, right? No drama, right? Just doing, being, interacting, smelling, tasting, touching, feeling. Right, that's all. And all that occurs naturally, spontaneously. We don't have to do anything. Here's another little quote. So whatever anyone else may do or say, whatever happens, leave things as they are. Don't worry yourself over them, and don't side with yourself. Can you see? It's an unlearning process, this training. We have to unlearn, right? Because we're used to what? Siding with ourselves. Seeing everything is through my own view. Right. So he says, stop siding with yourself. Just let things be. Right. All our drama, our hurts, our angers, our fears, our resentments, our sadnesses, our disappointments are all based on what? As Bhankya would say, we side with ourself. Right? If we don't side with ourself, then what? And we're free. No drama. So whatever anyone else may do or say, whatever happens, leave things as they are. These are very clear directives to us. If you take Bhankye as your teacher, if you think this man has wisdom, then you follow his instructions. Right? Yeah. Of course it is. That's why people came and people wait. You know, the trouble with Americans and Westerners as students of the Buddha is we think so much and we don't trust. The wonderful, you know, it's interesting. The difference between us and, let's say, traditional Asian Buddhists is they trust. A teacher tells them to do something, they do it. It's like, oh, you know, I would never thought of that. Thank you. They go home and do it. We go, what? You see, that's our first response. You know, we just, that's why thousands of people, you know, high, low, peasants, this, they came to hear him, and somebody was going to say, you know, yeah. They went, oh, this is brilliant. I just got to, you know, stop siding with myself. That's all. Hold on. look at this. Everybody's ready. It's like, what? You mean, and give up the drama? But then what's left? What? You mean, like, ease, conflict-free life? I mean, you know, right? Happiness? I mean, that frightens the hell out of us. Right? We go... It can't be that easy, right? I'm going to read this again. Please hold on to your questions. We have to listen to the teacher first. You know, Buddha Dharma, I take refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha. We don't, guys. We might have taken refuge, but we're still taking refuge in ourself and our thoughts. And that's the truth. Forgive me for being so blunt. That's the truth. It's very hard for us to get out of it, even though, you know, it's like Shanti Davis says, right? In that first, he says, living beings, right, they long for freedom, you know, and yet all they do is pursue the paths that bring them misery, right? They yearn for joy. And yet they are constantly sabotaging all their chances for happiness. And that's 8th century India. Right? And here we have 16th century Japan. Very different culture. Very different time. And we just don't get it. We don't trust. We don't have, you know... To take refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha, to take refuge in your teacher, means you have confidence and trust. Right? So when the teacher says, you want to be happy, do this. A good student does what?
Does it.
So, oh, that's why we have teachers. You know, if we thought we could do it on our own, we wouldn't need a teacher. But to go to a teacher or go to teachers is to acknowledge what? I don't know. You know, I mean, I've tried my many ways, but I cannot achieve the happiness and peace and you know, that I seek. I can't get out of my suffering. So teach me. And then the teacher teaches you, and then we go, oh, but hold on a second. Wait, now that can't be, or what do you know? It can't be that easy, or it got to be this, it can't be that. So that's, we should be aware of how that happens. So let me, with your permission, let me just continue on a little bit. So Master Bankei, 16th century, Japan, right to Tampa, 211. Right? So whatever anyone else may do or say, whatever happens, leave things as they are. Don't worry yourself over them, and don't side with yourself. Just stay as you are, right in the Buddha mind, and don't change it into anything. Remember yesterday's talk, how we change the Buddha mind into a demon, into a ghost, into all those things. If you do that, which means you rest in your Buddha mind and don't change it into anything, illusions don't occur, and you live constantly in the unborn mind. You're a living, breathing, firmly established Buddha. Don't you see? You have an incalculable treasure right at hand. Again, don't you see? You have an incalculable treasure right here. Yes, Steve.
How do we square that statement, that philosophy, that heart of Bankei, that says the unborn Buddha mind is there, trust it and do it, and the teacher is speaking these words, and if we trust the teacher, then we just go do it. And how do I square that when I think of Buddhist teaching, Buddhist psychology, that says, it says to me, don't trust another individual's words or philosophy without first testing it and experiencing it yourself and making it real. How do I square those two?
How do you? How would you?
Oh, God.
You have this.
Makes me.
You have the same innate Buddha mind as I have. Again, I mean, now you got the teaching. You can't.
It makes me think that I'm going to have to trust again. Meaning, I trusted teachers many, many times. And I lost that trust.
Because?
Because I discovered that it wasn't the truth.
Right. So what was the problem? How carefully before you took somebody to a teacher as your teacher, how carefully before you adopted a path, how carefully did you make sure of the authenticity of the path? Mm-hmm. How careful were you sure of the authenticity of the teacher that when you made your commitment, you were really clear that you were, you know, committing to something that based on your own investigation and your own immediate experience, you know, seems authentic?
Almost never. Because.
Yeah, because what?
We were taught that the word that we use there consistently is called faith.
Right, right. And Buddhism, as expounded by the Buddha, is not a faith-based. That's where those quotes came from. And that's why it's so different. Yeah. The Buddha, he said to his own disciples. Now, again, please understand, this is important. I was saying this some this morning. If you look at Abhidhamma Buddhist psychology, it considered one of the worst mental formations you could have in your mind is doubt and self-doubt as an ongoing mental state. Because, once you've committed yourself to something that you believe is right and true, to always then be doubting and questioning your own capacity would only undermine it. So it's considered to have, you know, that kind of neurotic doubting as a constant mind state, it will only do you damage. On the other hand, the teachings are very clear. You heard me say it this morning. You know, we have to, when we take refuge, think about, you know, what are the characteristics of a true refuge, and does the Buddha Dharma Sangha meet my criteria for that? And once one has, you know, has clearly investigated it, you know, there's good reason to commit with it. But because one has checked it out, one is not asked to take it on faith, right? Or because, and the Buddha said, don't take it on faith, don't take it because you respect me, don't take it because I told you so, you know. In other words, when he said it concords with your experience, it means that having started to walk this path, you are getting certain benefits or feeling a change like the path said you would. You know what I mean? That there's no dissonance.
And that's true. I would say to that, yes, that's true. What brought me to the path was life and personal experiences, and what is holding me daily and filling me with joy is the reality of this path. It's the truth. And that truth is the end result when I have applied the Dharma. The end result has been consistently what the Dharma said would happen.
Hmm. Right. So that way it accords with your experience.
Yes.
You know, you may read it, you may hear teachings, it accords with your logic. It's now accords with your experience. You meet people who have been practicing the path. From what they say, but even more important, the way they are, it gives you a sense, oh, this is path, does work. You read its history, it goes back thousands of years, you say, well, this has been around a long time. You know, this is not a fly-by-night, this is not something made up. You check out the teacher, what tradition does he teach in, who gave him permission to teach, what has his training been like, what is he like as a being, is he a hypocrite, observe him carefully, or her carefully. I mean, it should be all be congruent, and you know, so you put all together and you say, I have confidence in this. I mean, you know, anything, I guess, is possible in the realm of possibility. But, you know, to the best of your experience and your deep looking and your intellectual logic, it all kind of comes together. So, having said that, you know, at some point, if we're going to develop in anything, we need teachers, we need mentors. I mean, that's just the way. Whatever it is that we're doing in life, you know, if you wanted to learn to be a potter, right? I mean, hopefully you would choose somebody who was, well-trained, well-experienced. You look at the work they do, you say, see, that's really good work. And, you observe them as a teacher, you meet some of their other students, right? And you do that. Now, on the other hand, you may decide, the other qualification is, well, Steve, do you want to be an ordinary potter, or do you want to be a great potter? Then how you choose your mentors may be a little different or over time, right? But that's up to you. Does that make sense? Mel, were you finished? Yes, you still got that look on your face.
Practically, I wasn't going to push it.
You push it.
Practically speaking.
Mm-hmm. We got to be practical.
Well, practically speaking, is it really possible to just leave things alone?
Such as? Let's. What are these things?
We're gonna leave? All the things that need to get done in life. And
Hold on. He didn't say, don't get up in the morning and cook yourself breakfast.
What did he say? He said, leave things as they are.
Right, which means in terms of what? What's he talking about? I mean, he's not saying spend your life in bed and die. Right, is he?
I don't know.
No, what's he saying? What are these things? All right, things that happened in life. Things that the self gets stirred up about. Leave them alone. Leave them alone. Don't step into the battles that create anger and resentment and hurt and fear. All the drama. Just let things be. I mean, that's what he's saying. If you want to be happy. If you want to be at peace. If you don't, then if somebody throws down the gauntlet, pick it up. Right? I mean, again, this is, there's a purpose to this. He's saying what? Again, if you want inner harmony, peace, if you want openness and spaciousness, right? If you want open-heartedness, don't be partial. Don't always be choosing sides. Your side, their side. Just let it be. You know, respond to things, but in your mind, don't create the drama of self and other. He's not saying be passive. This is the mind he's talking about. Where this, you know, this is important. He's saying the mind. Don't pick it up. Don't make a drama, right? You see somebody suffering, go help them. You see you're suffering, help her. That's all. But all that, when he gave the examples of, your neighbor says something nice about you, you're happy. Your neighbor says something not nice about you, you're unhappy. Your neighbor says something nice about you, he's the greatest guy in the world, you're happy to see him. He says something not nice, you don't like him, you know what I mean? That drama. All the drama of the future. What's going to happen to me when this happens? Or, all that. He says, just leave it alone. Let it unfold. Do your best right now in the present. Stop worrying. He's not saying don't do anything. He wouldn't say to the peasants, don't plant your fields. Right? Plant your fields. Do your best. Cultivate your crop. Can you control the weather? No, you can't. You still do your best. So don't, it's that aspect of life. And that's the aspect of life that causes suffering. Right? The expectations that aren't met, that create disappointments. Right? That's, we're talking about suffering here. We're not just talking about life activity. We're talking about that extra piece that causes suffering, that causes unhappiness, that causes disharmony. So he's not. This is not just passivity. This is not. This is not. Don't be a personal chef. Don't be a cook. Go about all that. But it's that drama. And I was saying to somebody yesterday, who was new to retreat, talking about their experience. Retreat is very simple, right? I mean, it's very simple, right? The bell rings. You wake up, the bell rings again. You go down to the meditation hall. You sit down for 30 minutes. The bell rings. You stand up. You walk, the bell rings again, you sit down, right? It goes like that a bit, bell rings again, you go eat. Right? The bell rings again, you go walk outside. I mean, that's all that's going on, by the way. It's that simple. And yet, each of us may have a personal drama about this retreat, right? how it's going, how it's not going, how I feel, how I don't feel, what this one's doing, what that one's doing, what this one's not doing, what this one should be doing, right? I mean, it's, right? That's all what? That's the drama. It's not going on in reality, is it? In reality, what's going on? Bells are ringing. People are standing up. People are sitting down. Bodies are breathing. Right. 1 minute we're in the dining room eating. The next minute we're in the toilet excreting. You know, I mean, that's it's very simple. Right. And as Mill says, and then you look up, and you notice the trees. And you go, wow. Right? Just this. Could it be that simple? Could you just go through life? Right? Anybody want to stand up for complexity and projection and neuroses? Ken, is it, you want to stand up for that? That's what we're talking about. Can you see? And that's where we go. It can't be that simple. I mean, what about, right? Right? What's life without drama? What's life without self? Well, the truth is, it's delightful. Now again, you know, can you get from here to there like that? No. But you can get from here to that by making a choice. Right. This is what he's saying. You make the choice. So, you know, when partiality to self comes up, you remember what? I made a commitment to no longer be partial to myself. Oh, you let it go. You've just prevented what? A whole emotional drama from unfolding. Just like that. Right? Because, again, you've made the commitment. Over time, whatever time frame, 6 months, 6 years, 60 years, it becomes easier and easier, right? It becomes more and more natural. But in the beginning, it's simply, you know, it's like he's saying, you know, I've shown you today how it is, right? He said, there are those people who are going to go home and they're going to start living it, and there are those people who aren't. Remember he said that? You know, everybody's got to decide which one of those you are. I mean, I'm speaking for Bunke. That's what he's saying. Yes.
Yeah, I think all too often when we hear these teachings, you know, we have these great insights and we become connoisseurs of our neuroses. We sort of see how different they are and we can sort of feel good about the fact that we got that. Yeah, we understand that. But until we really change our behavior and have the faith and trust to really just do it and then see what happens, it just gets all tangled
up. Right, right. And so this is why, teachers like Bonke, you know, keep saying it over and over again. Just to kind of, and is so strong about it, because he understands exactly what you say. I mean, that it's like I said yesterday, or in the opening day, you know, a Dharma talk is not an intellectual presentation of the Dharma. You know, a Dharma talk, the Dharma teacher is trying to wake us up, trying to get us to see it, trying to take that step, right? Understanding that there's, on the other side, there's a lot that holds us back. All our conditioning, all our history, all our, you know, just the way the world appears to us. It doesn't appear this way, right? You know, we see the clouds, right? Bonke's saying, you know, I see the bright blue sky and the sun, you know? Right? The clouds are just covering it, guys. Right? Just get the clouds out of the way. You'll see the same thing. It's shining, right? Vast expanse of sky, radiant bright sun. Everything's illuminated beautifully. You know, and you go, I don't know where I stand. It's, you know, looks pretty cloudy. Well, we're looking at the same sky, right? He's no longer obscured by the clouds. Let me just read one more, then we'll stop. Now, these are questions. and I think this could be helpful in terms of your practice today. A layman asks, every time I clear a thought from my mind, another appears right away. Thoughts keep appearing like that without end. What can I do about them? I think there were some people already who've talked about, right? So please understand this is 16th century Japan. People have the same issues. That should make you feel good. Bankei says, please pay attention closely. Clearing thoughts from the mind as they arise is like washing away blood with blood. You didn't expect that. Clearing thoughts from the mind is, as they arise, is like washing away blood in blood. You may proceed in washing away the original blood, but you're still polluted by the blood you washed in. Which is, I think, some of you have been referring to in your mention of how we use thought to get rid of thought, or we clear up one issue by thinking about the issue, and, right, and we just replace it. Now we have a new issue to clear. No matter how long you keep washing, the bloodstains never disappear. Since you don't know that your mind is originally unborn and undying and free of illusion, let me read that again. Since you do not know that your mind is originally unborn and undying and free of illusion, you think that your thoughts really do exist. So you transmigrate in the wheel of existence. Remember he talked, you know, just going through different mind state after mind state. You have to realize that your thoughts are ephemeral and unreal, and without either clutching at them or rejecting them, just let them come and go of themselves. So this is instruction for people looking, for those who say, well, what do you do? He's telling you right now, this is what you do in your practice. Okay, this is it. Thoughts come and go. To try to stop thought with another thought is just, you know, just keeping the process going, right? You know, you're washing away the blood with blood, so you're still going to have blood. Right? You're still going to have, your mind's still going to be stained, right? He said, thoughts in their very nature are ephemeral. Ephemeral means what? What?
Fleeting.
Fleeting. They're just ephemeral. They come and they go. They're here, they're gone, right? Everybody here. Everybody here knows that. Right? You've all, you know, whether you've been meditating for a month or meditating for 100 years, you know, all you got to do is take one look at this mind and you will see what? Thoughts just come and go. Bum, 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 bum. Gone, gone, right? How many thoughts have you had since you woke up this morning, Alex? How many thoughts?
A lot.
More than 10.
More than 10.
More than what? I mean, how many, you think?
I'd say probably if I was better than 10.
Yeah. At least 1,000, and that's probably you're undercounting.
Yeah, I'm tired.
That's coffee. So, right. I mean, and that's just since breakfast, right? So, right. So if you divide it, you realize, you know, seconds, it's coming and going. And if I say of those 1,000 thoughts that you can, you know, were they all on the same subject?
No.
No.
I'm all over the place.
All over the place. Right there. You know, right here. There. I mean, it's right. And would anybody say they are that much different than Alex?
I've been transmigrating.
Right. I mean, for, no wonder you're exhausted. All that transmigration in one day. Yeah, and many people are exhausted just from their own transmigration from one mind state to another mind state, right? But when we step back, right, and we draw a conclusion, we would say, like Bankei, that our thoughts are ephemeral, fleeting, and unreal. Unreal meaning they cannot be grabbed. You know, they're nothing solid, right? They're just a blip, right, of language that appears very briefly in our awareness, and then they're gone. So they're fleeting, and they have no reality, no solidity, no permanence, right? They cannot be grasped, right? In other words, I could say that this cup has a temporal reality. I can grab it and hold it, right? And then I can hold it and show it to you. But you can't do that with a thought. As soon as you try to grab a thought, you look at a thought, it dissolves, right? It has a very different nature. It's ephemeral and unreal. So he says, do not clutch at them, do not attach, do not grab, or don't push them away. Just let them come and go of themselves. So this is the key practice. And notice what he says. Just let them come and go of themselves. Which means what? This is also their nature. They come and go by themselves. We don't have to do anything, do we? Thoughts come and go by themselves. Right? In the same way, sounds come and go by themselves. Right? All we have to do is listen. You sit down somewhere and you listen. And sounds appear. Bird sounds, sounds of the wind, sounds of people, sounds of boats, sounds of cars, sounds of airplane, sounds of a chainsaw, right? And they just, right? Sounds just come and go. And the ear is just what? Hear. And we don't have to follow the sounds. We don't have to, you know, make a big deal about the sounds. We don't, right? They just come and go. In the same way, when we open our eyes, we see different sights, right? I mean, now I see Ken, now I see Doug, now I see Stephen. You know, it's just, right? Things just appear and disappear, right? Things just change. Didn't you know what I'm saying? And we're okay with that, aren't we? So it's with thoughts that we get hung up, because with thoughts we're attracted or we're unattracted. We want to get rid of them. So it's the thoughts that we make such a big deal about. We cannot just let them come and go like we let other phenomena come and go. So we're saying, just let them come and go of themselves. They are like images reflected in a mirror. Remember the mirror? Okay. So again, he's coming back to that image of awareness. Right? Awareness, our unborn Buddha mind, is just awareness, right? And thoughts just are appearing in them and disappear. Does the mirror get sad when somebody makes a sad face in it? Does the mirror get angry if somebody writes with lipstick on it? No. The mirror just reflects. A mirror is clear and bright and reflects whatever is placed before it, but the image does not remain in the mirror. This is very important. You can have a thought, you can have a feeling, right? And if you let it go, a minute later, not a trace of it remains. Your mind is immediately clear again. It's amazing. Just that quickly, it can go. And does not leave a trace. Unless what? Unless you cling to it. Right? But please understand that clinging is what you are doing. By itself, our mirror mind just reflects what's before it. And as soon as that thing has passed, it's just reflecting whatever is present, right? So I'm looking at Ken, right? But now when I look over at Steve, I just see Steve. Ken has left no trace, right? I mean, if I want to look at Steve and compare him to Ken, right? You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, then now that's kind of a kind of mental fabrication that I am now doing. Do you understand what I'm saying? But by itself, the mind just reflects what's in front of it. So the practice of mindfulness, the practice of awareness, the practice of living in the present moment is about learning just to be with whatever is happening, and not to cling to it, not to confabulate about it, not to project, just to have pure experience. The image doesn't remain in the mirror. The Buddha mind is 10,000 times, not just 1,000 times, 10,000 times, brighter than any mirror, and is marvelously illuminative besides. Everything is seen clearly. All thoughts vanish tracelessly into its light. Right? You shine the light of awareness onto a thought, onto a feeling, onto perception, and just shine it, it just disappears. It doesn't leave a trace. It's hard for us to believe that, isn't it? Could it be that coming back to that child mind, right? So immediate, so pure, so present, is still here, functioning as purely and as uncontaminated as then. Nothing has changed in it. You have not dirtied it up. It cannot be dirtied, right? The mirror that has its natural capacity to reflect, even if it's covered with dirt, right? All you have to do is what? You wipe it off. And then what? There it is. Right? Shining as brightly as it ever did. Even you know, whether it's covered with a light covering of dust, or whether it's covered with 2-inch thick dirt, encrusted. It may be a different cleaning process. But when it's clean, it's the same mirror. Okay. Your unborn Buddha mind is that like that. Right? It is always shining brightly. It is the Buddha mind. It is what all the masters and teachers have realized. There's no separate mind. The Buddha was called the Buddha because he realized his Buddha mind. And when he realized his Buddha mind, the natural clarity and illuminative wisdom of that mind shone forth. That's all. Okay. Is that clear? Everybody here has that mind. Right? And the practice is what? Revealing it. But as long as you continue to throw dirt on it, it's never gonna reveal itself, is it? So it's practice. And he's telling us in here, you know, stop the partiality to self, stop taking sides, let thoughts come and go, do not follow them. And you know, rest in awareness. Relax. You don't have to make it happen. Does everybody have a mirror in their bathroom? Yeah, you don't have to go up there and make one, do you? Everybody's got one. It's like that. Everybody has a mirror mind. So it's 12 o'clock. Let me stop. And again, please remember those interested in the, if you're interested in transmission, we can leave a couple of copies of over there. Put a note in the bell and come to the meeting at 6:30 upstairs.